CIUT 89.5 FM, the station that brings you a sonic journey on Across the Universe with Ken Stauer, Sunday evenings 5 to 8 p.m.
CIUT 89.5 FM, the sound of your city.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to talk to Jamie Swift about his new book, together with his co-author, Ian McKay, The Vimy Trap. And, of course, we're right on schedule. The Prime Minister was there. And we're going to get the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about Vimy. And later in the show, we will talk to Stephen Gowans, who's going to be coming to Toronto. By the way, the co-author of The Vimy Trap, Ian McKay, is speaking tonight. Phil, where?
At the Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
So right, listen to the Taylor Report and run off down to Cecil Street.
Listen to Jamie Swift and then go see his co-author. And again, it's 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, 25 Cecil Street, which is in the Spadina area, Spadina and Dundas.
Uh-huh.
And
okay. 7 o'clock, right after this show, and it is Ian McKay. He's the co-author of The Vimy Trap. Subtitle, or How We Learn to Stop Worrying and Love the Great War. I think we're joined now by Jamie Swift. Are you there, sir?
I am.
Very nice to talk to you. I want to tell our listeners, this is a great book. Everybody should have it. It's the kind you really do need on your shelf. Actually, for your own self-protection, the subject of gas comes up, and it seems to me right now we need our gas masks on because the Prime Minister spoke, and I checked all the headlines, and strikingly, the Toronto Star said, "This is Canada at its best," is from the Prime Minister, and the Globe and Mail said, "Canada at its best," which shows a little perspiration on their part to make sure they get this right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but Montreal Gazette, was a little out of step. They had a headline from a 94-year-old man who said, "We didn't learn much, did we?" That was the headline.
Yeah.
Then checking, by the way, the net, I'm sure you know better than I do, can drive you crazy looking for headlines at what they're saying. But La Presse reported their prime minister as saying, "Here is where the birth of Canada. This is the birth of Canada."
Yes, he said that in French, oddly enough.
Yes, very daring. Is that an observation or is that an order? Because your book, and I'm talking too much about it, is a great book. Everybody should have it. He had a father, Justin Trudeau had a father, and as you point out in the book, two guys who put on, suited up for the war, Diefenbaker and Pearson, they never said that. So the son, Justin, has found something that they didn't know.
Well, so, I think that's true. I mean, this idea that Canada was born of war is rather puzzling. I would see it as sort of the Big Bang theory of Canadian origins, the idea that a country can, be born in a war is puzzling. It speaks poorly of whoever's making that observation, but unfortunately, it's become increasingly common, and it's one of those stories that if it's told often enough and loudly enough, people might start to believe it, which is a bit worrisome, particularly because there was a great emphasis placed by the people we call in the book Vimyists,
yes,
on bringing high school students over to France yesterday it was, the centenary of the Battle of Vimy Ridge, and there's a lot of emphasis among some high school teachers on this idea, this, I think, rather nonsensical idea that Canada originated out of war. We don't think it's true. We think the book makes quite a concise and persuasive, evidence-based argument that the people who remembered what was called the Great War because they were affected either directly by having participated or indirectly by having had relatives participate and often be killed or maimed physically or spiritually. The way they remembered the war in the 20s, 30s, and beyond was rather different. There was none of this drum and bugle patriotism that we see now. So what we try to do in the book is show how that, what people thought in the wake of the war, and we're talking here about English Canada, of course, not of French Canada. It's not surprising that the Montreal papers were, should we say, somewhat more circumspect with respect to how the war is remembered than the Toronto press and so on. So we argue in the book that it's not the birth of a nation. It would be, if you accept that, then you have to ask the question, the birth of which nation? Because, of course, Quebec was dead set against the war. I went to the Vimy Memorial, where Mr. Trudeau spoke yesterday, and I looked at the names of what are called the fallen, which is a euphemism for people who were drowned in mud or blown to bits too small to ever recover.
11,000, am I right?
11,000 killed and wounded at Vimy Ridge. But on the monument itself, these are all the Canadians, I think, who went missing in the Western Front. I think in France. I could be wrong. In any case, they're alphabetical, and I counted over 40 men by the name of Taylor who went missing, and I counted but one man by the name of Tremblay. Tremblay, of course, is one of the most common names in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an indication that there was a pretty fair split there. And also, I think it's important to note that Vimy Ridge produced so many casualties that it accelerated the pressure on the Canadian government to bring in conscription, which, of course, in that very year, 1917, really fractured Canada and threatened its very existence.
Yeah, that it didn't pull us together going up the hill. It almost tore us apart. I was very struck by it, and thank you for the book for pointing this out. You have the four divisions heroically, is the high diction, going up the hill. But a month later or two, the prime minister visits and he goes home and he says, now we're going to have conscription, and all hell broke loose.
Yeah. So the idea of, again, to return to Mr. Trudeau, that Canada was born at Vimy Ridge is, to repeat, which Canada, number one? And you'd think somebody whose father was a notable Quebecer, who, of course, his political career was based on opposition to Quebec nationalism, so Trudeau Sr. would have been very aware of this. Now, it's interesting, though, too, that Trudeau Jr., Justin Trudeau, appeared as an actor in a CBC production about World War One, and he played a man named Talbot Papineau, who was a famous, sort of a great white hope for Canadian unity. His father was Talbot Papineau was a descendant of Louis-Joseph Papineau and a Philadelphia mother.
Mm-hmm.
So Trudeau plays Talbot Papineau in this TV docudrama that was on CBC a few years ago, obviously. And the last words of Talbot Papineau before he goes over the top, I believe it's at Passchendaele, he says to one of his comrades, "You know, Huey, this is suicide." And Talbot Papineau was immediately killed.
Uh-huh.
So I guess Mr. Trudeau has some sort of residual romantic attachment to this fairy tale of Canada being born at Vimy Ridge.
Well, certainly your book militates against romanticism, song, this tendency of high rhetoric. You call it high diction.
Yeah, after
which is,
Paul Fussell.
It's an irritating part of, we're all familiar with this. We go into a courtroom and they say, take the gum out of your mouth, or you go to church and they say, keep still. And that's where you hear high diction. And so this, with Vimy, Vimy-ism. They seem to be trying to silence people, which makes your book rather brave, by the way.
Yeah, well, I think when you do talk about this kind of thing in a critical way, the first thing you can be or are often accused of is being, you know, besmirching or bad-mouthing the memory of the soldiers who were killed at Vimy Ridge or in any other war. So I think we have to put that aside. A critique of the war and the reasons for a war and the way the war is subsequently romanticized is quite distinct from an appreciation of the efforts of the people who fought and died on our side. And I think one of the things about Vimyism, or this Anglo-Canadian militarized patriotism, is that it's really all about us. It's a giant English-Canadian selfie, if you will, because we don't talk about the massive losses of life on the German side. And those losses are just as tragic as the losses on the Canadian side. Mm-hmm. And in that context, keeping that in mind, that sort of what you could call a post-patriotic understanding of that battle and that war, we have to keep in mind that the Vimy Memorial that people, the listeners, may have seen on TV yesterday, or certainly have seen if they take out their wallet and look at a $20 bill, there it is. Mm-hmm. The man who sculpted and designed the Vimy Memorial, Walter Allward, a Toronto sculptor, is his life's work, his masterpiece. He spoke of it as a sermon against the futility of war, and that's a direct quote from Allward. Mm-hmm. His memorial, one of the most important statues, I think, shows one of the figures breaking his sword, which is a direct biblical reference, of course, to thou shalt beat thou thy swords into plowshares. Mm-hmm. So again, that the memorial itself is a peace monument, but what we've heard over the past few days, the word peace was not often mentioned, and the words valor and heroism and this kind of thing, this what you refer to as high diction, that tended to predominate, and so there's a jarring disconnect between the message of the monument and the message that was put out by the government and by NGOs like the Vimy Foundation. I was on a train the other day, Toronto to Kingston, where I live, and VIA was handing out to every passenger a little Vimy pin with a little card attached saying that Vimy was the birth of a nation. Yeah. So this is on the government-owned railway.
That doesn't work. It just... It hurts the ear when you, as you point out, because we minimally are two nations, probably three, and it's official, by the way. I mean, I was there when Parliament said that Quebec was a nation.
Yeah.
Have they erased that? Do I no longer remember?
it is on the Quebec on the Quebec license plate. It is Souvienne.
Well, I have to ask you. Go ahead.
I think if you want to, if anybody interested in this should go on to the Veterans Affairs Canada website and look under Vimy events, of which there are dozens, and see just how many are being or have been held in Quebec versus in English Canada, and of the events being held, the Vimy events being held in Quebec, how many are Anglophone events and how many are Francophone events. I think that people would find that comparison telling.
Yes, I understand, by the way, there's a new popular hit song by a man named Richard Desjardins out now called Vimy, and the last words are, it was worthless, or it's words of that effect, futile,
really?
Worthless.
Richard Desjardins. I should look that up.
It's just out, and that's what all Quebecers are listening to, and apparently they enjoy it.
Of course, we know nothing about them.
They live under a language code, so they're hidden there.
There was a fuss a year or so ago in Montreal. There's a park in Outremont, which is a Francophone suburb, affluent Francophone suburb of not a new suburb, an old suburb in Montreal, and it was called Parc Vimy. And the Good Burgers of Outremont decided to change the name to Parc Jacques Parizeau. Of course, Mr. Parizeau was famously the Quebec Nationalist mm-hmm. Premier, PQ co-founder almost. And this caused the hair in Anglo-Montreal to catch fire. Because Vimy was kicked out, and Jacques Parizeau, who's often disdained by Anglo-Montreal. So part of a park in Notre-Dame-de-Grâce, NDG, has been renamed for Vimy. So even today,
so Vimy's on the move.
Like Montreal, yeah, it's the commemoration and memory are contested terrain, I think.
Yes. Somebody wanted to invent a game, said they were going to create a game called Predict the Past.
Yes.
And I read your book, and the past has been moving around, like a cockroach. Really hard to find. Those guys who gathered in 1936 that you described, they didn't say any of the things or think any of the things that the people did yesterday.
Yeah, I think you're referring there to the unveiling, the inauguration of the Vimy Memorial in France. And we argue in the book that the predominant theme at that gathering, to which several thousand Canadians came, and they had to come by ship, was never again and peace. Yeah. And notably, Canada's first Silver Cross mother, Mrs. Charlotte Susan Wood, was there in 1936 at the Vimy Memorial, and Mrs. Wood had had five sons killed in Britain's Imperial Wars, the youngest of whom, Percy, was killed at Vimy Ridge. He was 17 years old. And Mrs. Wood, who was a working-class woman, a laundress from Winnipeg, was there, and she got to meet the king. And she said to the king as she looked down over the former killing field, "You know, I really still wonder why our boys had to go through all that." So that's an important statement. Yes. From somebody who had reason to question the war, and she did so.
You could not tell her not to say that. five sons. This is Jamie Swift. The book is Vimy, The Vimy Trap, pardon me, and his co-author is Ian McKay. And Ian McKay is going to be talking at 7 o'clock at Steelworkers Hall at 25 Cecil Street today. So please, everybody, turn out for that. Everybody has to get a copy of this book. This is very important for the understand war and understand this country. I got to tell you, you have a picture that is a punch in the stomach to a lot of people. I think it's great. You have a photograph of the famous John McCrae, he wrote In Flanders Fields, and tears get in the corner of everybody's eyes, soldier physician McCrae, and he was a patriotic imperialist who ached, those are the quotes, ached for war. And during the conscription election, McCrae wrote, "I hope I stabbed a French Canadian with my vote." I did not know he had said that.
Yeah, that's in a letter from McCrae to his mother. It must have been written right after the famously, bitterly corrupt 1917 election over conscription that divided Quebec from English Canada. And I think that was, typical of a lot of Anglo-Canadians.
Yeah, he was fighting fighting for empire.
He was, yes. He was, as you said, quite keen on war. He went to the South African War, which was a war in which Canada participated, and the war was aimed not at the liberation of the African majority in South Africa, but it was fought so that British mining interests could gain control over rich South African mineral deposits. So, this is the kind of feeling or thinking that suggests that the wars that Canada has fought have always been fought for freedom and democracy. And this is something we quote in the book that our current Governor General has argued, David Johnston, that Canada's wars have all been fought for democracy. It's a very, very puzzling notion to anybody who really understands anything about history.
And the fellows who served, who thought they were fighting for king and country and empire, right? For the empire.
Well,
on all sides, actually. Also, the Austrians and the Germans, they were fighting for an empire as well.
Well, on one level, that's true, but I think I've read enough, probably too much, about war, and one of the most commonplace and accurate observations about war and soldiers is that when it comes down to the actual struggle, incredible levels of violence, what motivates soldiers is not high ideals of freedom and patriotic flag waving. They're fighting for the small gang of men with whom they've been living and suffering in the trenches and drinking and carousing and all this kind of thing creates a very special bond between people. Anybody who's ever been involved in a cause knows that this kind of thing is—it's a sort of a social glue,
it's a
group
shared,
dynamic that
shared
gets
suffering.
Created.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's what people, men in, say, at the Battle of Vimy Ridge, I would suggest, really were fighting for.
Yes.
They were fighting to win and continue living, but they were fighting for their buddies.
Yes, again, it's Jamie Swift, and it's called The Vimy Trap. And there's another matter which I had not realized until I read this book, and that is that. Prior to the attack, the Canadian forces had used gas, and you quote a Canadian military historian said, sure, it was efficient, it worked, but that day it didn't work. But tell about the gas involved, because we have gas issues or chemical issues going on right now, and our prime minister says, yep, we got to go to war over that. Go ahead and talk about that.
Everybody knows that gas was, chemical warfare was widely used and essentially introduced during the First World War. The Germans used it famously in the Second Battle of Ypres, and the Canadians were involved in that. But the Canadians and the British were just as avid practitioners of poison gas warfare as were the Germans. In the period before, a matter of weeks before the Battle of Vimy Ridge, the Canadian soldiers, officer class, decided they'd stage a very big trench raid, not a full-scale assault, but a raid. So they deployed a fair amount of poison gas, but unfortunately, they didn't gauge the wind correctly. The gas either blew back or settled in shell holes where the Canadian soldiers were obliged to try to get away from enemy fire, and so they got poisoned by their own gas. So this was not uncommon during the Great War. But, that's, again, one of the great tragedies of this particular war that is not much talked about during the ceremonies that focus on what I called before the great Big Bang theory of Canadian history and Canada's national origins.
Mm-hmm. As Jamie Swift, the book is The Vimy Trap. And lastly, Pierre Burton said he's our greatest soldier, and that would be the General Curry. I learned, by the way, as a result of your stimulus of your book, he came to Canada originally as an Irish Catholic. The family changed their name to Curry from Carrington, and he became a Methodist. And then he's our greatest soldier, not that that's related, but he had some you quote a veteran novelist who wrote about it, who spoke of his rhetoric as a claptrap. You have also a relatively low opinion of him. Talk about him briefly, if you would.
Well, Curry is, I saw a piece, I think it was in the Globe and Mail today, or maybe it was in the Toronto Star, saying that Curry should be posthumously elevated in rank to field marshal.
Oh, why not?
From a general to honor what a great man he was. Two things about Curry. One, he was an embezzler. He managed to shift some funds before the war away from a group of soldiers he wanted to raise, contribute to raising his own regiment, but he got into trouble in a BC real estate deal, and so the money mysteriously made it from one pocket to the other.
A
so
lot
that's
of
an
money.
Interesting thing. Yes, apparently. And also the idea that Canada was this autonomous military force in World War One, particularly because of the Battle of Vimy Ridge. Well, in fact, subsequent to the Battle of Vimy Ridge, we have the equally awful and bloody Battle of Passchendaele. And Arthur Currie thought that Canada shouldn't participate in that because it would be a mass slaughter. This is where Talbot Papineau was killed. And he suggested to Haig, who was the overall commander, that the Canadians shouldn't be involved. But he was overruled, and the Canadians were involved, and they died by the thousands. Mm-hmm. So that sort of sheds a
So he didn't get authority. He didn't have a kind of a lift from his great victory that they listened to him. They ignored him.
Well, in that case, yes. He was sort of in a subaltern position. He was an underling of General Haig, and Haig thought, the attack on Passchendaele, which was notoriously muddy, and bloody, huge butcher's bill on both sides, and, Currie might have been sensible enough to say, hey, this might not be a good idea, but as I said, he was overruled there.
Not a good idea, but you know best.
Yeah.
Jamie Swift, it's a great book. We're so glad we talked to you because maybe we won't fall into the Vimy trap.
Let's hope not.
If we read the Vimy traps, and your colleague Ian McKay is speaking tonight at the Steelworker Hall, 25 Cecil Street. You're going to be in Toronto at Central Library on the 18th.
Yeah, that's a week tomorrow.
A week tomorrow, Toronto Central Library. Just people check that. We think it's probably about 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, I think it is.
7 p.m.
At the main library.
Well, thanks for that book. And we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. Okay, thank you for having me.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. We have a little bit of that song, I think, and then we will come back.
Si au moins c'était pour toi, pour la rivière ou le moulin, je comprendrais mieux pour